The Cowboy State is unique. Not a whole lot of folks. Not a whole lot of fuss. Hard work. Handshakes and horses. Pickups, pipelines, and the UW pokes. And Equality State culture is alive and well right here in Campbell County. We're home to the Razor City, the energy capital of the nation, which proudly fuels American dreams from sea to shining sea. We work hard and play harder in the home of the prep powerhouse Gillette Camels and our beloved Panthers, Wolves, Wild, Pronghorns, and Rough Riders, and soon, the Thunder Basin Bolts. So saddle up for another ride, partner, as we wake up Wyoming with Suburban Cowboy A.P. Harold.
608, 8 past 6, 52, and then 7. Good to have you with us. Hump Day in the land of the camels. Wednesday, miércoles, as we say in Espanol. Great show coming up for you today. In the 8 o'clock hour, Campbell County School District representatives will be here at 7:30. Jason Santini, one of the gajillion guys and gals running for that GOP nod nomination. U.S. House Cynthia Loomis is retiring. Will join us via phone. And for most of this 6 o'clock hour, local pastor, the Reverend Caleb Nelson, will be live in studio to talk about morality, righteousness, and justice, and certainly some justice from the big guy upstairs. He didn't dump 14 inches on us. Heck, even for a Georgia cracker, that was no big deal. I don't even know if I needed four-wheel drive. Maybe could have gotten away with front-wheel drive. Maybe, possibly, could have gotten away with driving my southeastern United States classic rear-wheel drive car today, but I didn't chance that. I may be a riverboat gambler. I may be stupid, but I'm not dumb. This is Wake Up Wyoming.
It's time for your weather update from the News Radio 1270 1067 Weather Center.
It sure is, and I'm so happy to report it's not a gajillion inches of snow. It's overcast and breezy at the Gillette Campbell County Airport. 34 degrees today, high 40, 80% chance of snow early, then just a slight chance of rain, snow late, 20% by this evening. Tonight, it ramps back up. 40% chance early, 80% chance late of snow. Blustery, low 28. Tomorrow, high 35. Snow likely all day long. But Friday, mostly sunny, high 46. Saturday, sunny, high 58. Sunday, mostly sunny, high 62 degrees. Maybe the Lord's Day, 62 degrees. It's going to be mostly sunny because our first guest is a local pastor, the Reverend Caleb Nelson. And I guess we'll credit you, Caleb. We'll throw those headsets on, for bringing us in this Friday 46, Saturday 58, Sunday 62. You have anything to do with that?
Not that I know of.
All right.
I have not talked to the Lord about it at all.
Okay. It wasn't some strange communique in your sleep this evening.
It was not.
Okay. Caleb Nelson, local pastor. Where are you from originally, man?
I grew up in Fort Collins, Colorado.
Home of the Rams. I know you're not a big sports guy, but you at least know that.
I do, yeah.
Okay.
Been to the CSU campus many times.
All right. And where'd you go undergrad?
Patrick Henry College in Northern Virginia.
Northern Virginia. You know, I went to William & Mary, which is in Williamsburg, a couple hours away from Atlanta. I get up there and I see all these people wearing the Nova shirts. And I think there's a lot of Villanova fans, but it was Northern Virginia Community College they were talking about. What town in Northern Virginia is Patrick Henry located?
Percival. Little village of about 2,000 people.
That is pretty much, for that part of the country, a village. You could call that a town out in Wyoming, but in Virginia, especially in that northern, that is a village. There's some shopping centers with more than 2,000 people, I think. And what'd you major in there?
Literature.
Literature. And what stoked your interest in the great classics?
Well, mostly it was my mother. As I grew up, I was homeschooled, and Mom taught us literature classes. My siblings, my friends, we got to just read fun books, talk about them, write about them, and I said, wow, I want to do this for a living.
There you go. But obviously, you changed directions just a little bit. You went and got your master's in divinity. When did you realize you wanted to go to seminary?
Well, I felt like my parents kept pushing me to go to seminary. They're faithful church members, have been their whole lives, their parents before them, and I felt like they were always wanted a son who would be a pastor. And I flat out told them a couple years ago, Mom and Dad, you just would not let the issue die. And they said, no, we never brought it up. You're the one who kept bringing it up all the time, Caleb.
I see. And did you go right into MDiv out of undergrad, or did you take some time off to do something else?
I took approximately 2.5 weeks.
That's some time, but 17 days. Where'd you go for your MDiv?
Greenville Presbyterian Theological Seminary.
And that's either in Greenville, South, or North Carolina, I would assume.
South Carolina.
South Carolina, which is the bigger Greenville. I've been to both. I would prefer the South Carolina one.
Me too. I haven't been to both, though.
Okay, all right. So you think you would. And seminary, is it 2 years, Master's in Divinity?
Usual degree program takes 3 years.
3 years, okay. And I would assume yours took three.
Mine took three.
Okay, and break it down for us, for folks that are going on the Protestant side of the aisle to get an MDiv, the first year, the second year, the third year. Are there different things that you're studying and applications in terms of getting into some pulpit work?
More or less, yeah. There are four major divisions in the seminary curriculum. The first is going to be biblical languages. If you're going to read the Bible, you need to be able to read it as it was given, that is, in Greek and in Hebrew.
And you need to be able to read, period, right?
Well, that too.
Yeah. That's why one of the many reasons I didn't go in that direction. So that's good. And then the other divisions are?
Church history. You have to figure out what other Christians have done in the past. If you don't know that, then you will make a lot of colossally stupid mistakes.
You'll do that anyway as a human being, but you want to try to minimize that, right?
Yeah, you want to try to make new mistakes.
Okay, there you go. Okay, your own mistakes. All right.
And then the third division is theology, of course, where you read and you learn what the Bible says about God. That's the definition of theology, and that's what a Protestant seminary tries to instill in its victims.
And the fourth and final? Division?
The fourth division, Bible, theology, church history, and...
Is it stepping up and getting into the pulpit?
Yeah, homiletics, that's right.
Homiletics.
Learning how to tell all of this stuff that you've learned to the man in the street.
There you go. Guests on AM 1270, FM 106.7 KIML, Wake Up Wyoming, are served refreshing Dasani water, distributed locally by Coca-Cola, and the good Reverend Caleb Nelson has a bottle of water right in front of him. That's not Presbyterian holy water, is it?
It's not.
Okay, all right. It's just Dasani water distributed locally by Coca-Cola. 6:19, 19 past 6:41, and then 7. And at some period in time, probably during your MDiv schooling, you got married, right?
I did, but it actually was not during my MDiv schooling. I was at a little church in South Carolina where there were four college-age young people, two guys, two girls, another guy and other girl were already a couple.
Okay.
And so my wife and I, the woman who is now my wife, and I just kind of found each other.
Well, providentially, as you Presbyterians might say.
Exactly.
And how long have you been married?
10 months.
10 months. Well, congratulations.
Well, thank you.
And there's two in the family now, but pretty soon that may double is what I hear.
That's right. My wife and I are expecting twins on April 21st.
Okay, fantastic. We got tax season coming up, and a little bit after that, twins.
Yeah, we've heard a lot about how they're going to be born on tax day, and we actually have a C-section scheduled for April 14th.
So. Not a C-corporation. That would be something to do with taxes. Our guest is the Reverend Caleb Nelson, and you do pastor a church here locally.
I do.
That is?
Harvest Reformed Presbyterian Church.
Harvest Reformed Presbyterian Church. Harvest, I guess you're trying to get folks into the Christian fold. And then Reformed Presbyterian, what does that mean?
Oh, yeah, that's the big question. Well, Reformed means like the theology of the Reformation. Back in the 16th century, so that's the 1500s, an Augustinian monk named Martin Luther decided to register his complaints against the Roman Catholic Church.
This was the same guy that nailed the things up on the wall in Germany?
Right, 95 theses on the church door.
How many of those have you memorized?
I have not memorized any of them.
Okay, all right. And Presbyterian, what does that word mean?
Presbyterian is a Greek word that means rule by elders. Presbyter is the Greek word for elder. So we could have called it an elder church, but that doesn't sound as cool as a Greek name church.
Plus, with a young pastor like yourself, it might be confusing to call it an elder church. I think it's maybe senior care or something.
Well, that's true.
Okay. Our guest is Caleb Nelson, the Reverend Caleb Nelson, pastor of Harvest Presbyterian Reformed Church. When we come back, we're going to talk with Caleb macroscopically about righteousness, about justice, and about morality. And before we come back, you'll hear that I put together a little snippet of some popular songs, and I'd like Caleb to listen to that as well, obviously, folks on the other side listening to. And think about not just the great beats, some of them, Lynyrd Skynyrd, the Eagles, whatnot, but also how these words might impact ideas like morality and justice and righteousness. This is Wake Up Wyoming.
They lure of eating money, got a very strong appeal. They're sharing a drink they call loneliness, but it's better than drinking alone.
It's good to be king and have your own way.
Every girl crazy about a goddamn man.
I was tired of my lady. We've been together too long.
Will she still love you?
I know just how to fake it, and I know just how to scheme.
My honey, what you gonna do with your life?
There's no talking from you.
Some great tunes there that get us energized. We're rocking down the highway in our car or truck, but also, as our guest is live with us, the Reverend Caleb Nelson, pastor at Harvest Reformed Presbyterian Church in Gillette. The significance, Caleb, the lyrics there, the human condition. We're talking about money. We're talking about sex. We're talking about fame. We're talking about loneliness. We're talking about meaning. We're talking about conscience and morality.
We are.
And when you look at big picture, morality, righteousness, justice, I don't care if you're Christian, I don't Protestant, Orthodox, Catholic, Jewish, agnostic, Mormon, atheist, Muslim, everybody wants to be righteous, they want to be moral, they want to be holy, they want to be correct. How do we go about as human beings searching for that?
Well, there's a paradigm that I've found personally very useful, and this comes from a man I've worked for many years, actually, a guy named Marvin Alasky. He's a magazine editor out in North Carolina, was a communist back in the 70s, a Jewish man, convert to Christianity, and just a brain. And anyway, he says relational justice is the way to think about this. We hear about social justice a lot. He says we need to move past that to relational justice.
Well, first let's talk about what social justice may or may not mean to somebody. It seems to me that social justice is something that's come up in the political secular left talking about equality of outcomes and redistributing goods, services, and other efficiencies to people that may not have as much as somebody else. Is that a fair assessment of what social justice seems to mean in the modern Western world?
It certainly seems to, at least in the American context. Social justice means that we will take what someone has and give it to someone who doesn't have. Robin Hood.
Yeah, and it seems that comes from the idea of fairness and that we don't like it. Something feels wrong when we see one guy has the big shiny Mercedes and the other guy has the Yugo. One guy has the McMansion, and one guy's living in a busted-out trailer home, and that doesn't feel right somehow to us.
That's exactly right. Although, speaking of the McMansion, AP, you know that if a McDonald's closed and you refurbished it, made it into a home to live in, what would you have?
Is it a McMansion?
It would be a McMansion.
Now, the problem is that McDonald's are so popular, I don't know if they're ever going to close. But that's a very good point. So that's social justice, and it doesn't work so much because even if you redistribute all the income and goods in the world, within a few weeks, you'd start to see that people that are good stewards of that would have more and those who aren't would have less. So, and that's been tried, socialism, Bernie Sanders, communism, throughout history. That certainly doesn't work. It also doesn't work to have an autocrat, a dictator, who just says everything is mine. But anyway, we're moving that's back into politics. But as we talk about relational justice, what does that mean?
Relational justice is more the idea that people ought to keep their commitments relationally. And Dr. Alasky says the biggest injustice that can be done to someone is to have that person grow up fatherless. And it's amazing that the studies show that people without a father in the home are much more likely to have bad outcomes across all kinds of fields.
Yeah, I was reading an article that you had sent me, 20 times more likely for those who are fatherless to end up in prison than those with a father. That's a crazy high spike.
Right. And yeah, and that's not conservative data in any sense. That's from the President's Father's Day speech back in 2008.
And certainly in the Christian constructs, God, the Father, the Son, the Holy Spirit, there's that idea there. But we're talking about just very tangible, earthly, biological father or a father figure in the home raising young people is of paramount importance.
We are, yeah. It's relational justice that rather than the government forcing you to have such and such or giving, taking from somebody else to give to you, the idea is more people keeping their commitments.
But when you have social justice and you have income redistribution and women with children, young ones are getting essentially the father is replaced by money, and that does feed people and it does clothe and house people, but it doesn't provide that spiritual, moral, and actual day-to-day leadership of an actual father in the home. And so that's become an issue, it looks like, in society throughout the Western world.
Certainly, yeah. About 40% of American children now grow up fatherless.
And that's obviously an important relationship, maybe perhaps the most important relationship out there, but it's not the only one. We have husband and wife, siblings, mothers and kids. We have our relationships with our friends in our community, perhaps at our house of worship, volunteer organizations, military. All these relationships are important.
They are. And if you back out on your commitments, it doesn't take a genius to know that a divorce court is a place that really hurts, where everything feels unjust, no matter, in one sense, what the outcome is. Why? Well, that's a pointer to the deep, crying need for relational justice in every human heart.
So if we think about it and we see that social justice has not been an entire success, and in fact, many of us would deem it a failure, and we see that relational justice is important, let's go beyond saying that and saying, how can we strive for more relational justice? What are some keys?
Well, one key is to think before you do. You know, don't make a commitment. And the commitment I'm talking about here, of course, is going to be more than anything else, the sexual commitment. Where when you come together sexually, you are saying with your body, I'm open to the possibility of children. I'm willing to entertain that possibility, and I'm willing to entertain it with you.
And I remember my Uncle Arthur told me that the second most important decision he ever made was getting married, and the first most important decision was to have children or not. And that's interesting that you as a pastor would bring that up. And obviously, you've got a situation where in the Judeo-Christian, in fact, in the Abrahamic faiths, I can't speak as well, no expert on the Abrahamic faiths, but certainly quite ignorant of the Eastern faiths, that the traditional role would be no sexuality before you're married. And when you are married, that you're expected to, if kids are a byproduct, as they often are with the marriage, to be responsible for them and raise them in a just, moral, righteous fashion.
That's exactly right. You don't back out on that commitment. You don't say, well, the sexual act didn't mean anything, and I am free to reject the fruit of my love.
And therefore, in the richest country in the history of the world, the United States, I think that's fair to say, and in many of these very rich, as well, modern Western industrialized nations, you see that no amount of money is able to replace the family unit, the father figure, wholesome moral upbringing, because we have, even among the poorest in America, more material wealth than probably the richest in America 75 years ago, and yet we still have all type of strife, depression, sorrow, anger, and crime.
That's right. I was out in the Bay State, Massachusetts, a couple of months ago on Cape Cod, which, as we all know, is a vacationer's paradise. And my wife and I were driving around looking at the beautiful homes. And I couldn't resist. I said to her, you know, look at this beautiful house. Look at the size of that porch. Look at this ocean view. The people who live in this house are happy all the time. They just enjoy life. They don't fight. They aren't mad at each other. They have no problems like other people do because they've got this house. And then I laughed because we all know how ridiculous that is. The beautiful home doesn't guarantee any kind of spiritual or psychological prosperity.
You're right. In fact, I think if you read holy texts, including the Bible, you'll see that throughout history, and certainly if you just observe with your eyes and ears, that there have been poor and rich people who have been in deep sorrow, deep anger, who have been immoral. The same thing, there have been poor and rich people who have been so happy and led upstanding lives. So while material wealth is important, we all want to get more and more of it, and it's a blessing from God, it is not the decider in terms of morality, happiness, contentedness, any of that.
No, and experience bears that out every day of our lives. We have all been in beautiful homes, seen beautiful homes on the outside, and known the people who live in those homes.
But it would seem to me that while you and I are in agreement with that, and I think most people are, the idea of social justice and the idea of a state that takes so much of our material goods, the state then must think that, hey, the key to happiness, because we want to be a state that's stable, is material wealth, is money. And so if we can distribute it reasonably, evenly, then we can have a stable society and we can remain in power. Is that not a logical inference about what's most important to the state?
It certainly seems to be. Yeah, you hear that all the time with China. People say the Chinese government is shaky. It's rocking on its foundations. It has to keep providing economic growth or its people will just say, forget it. We're getting a new government.
And in another article that you had sent me before this interview, it talked about the difference, before we go to our first break, children looking at a doctor and a cook. And if it was up to children to solve the disease, they'd vote with a cook because they're always hungry. But the doctor may be able to cure them of something that mere food cannot fix.
Right. Plato said that, and he was right on, as he often was.
Our guest on Wake Up Wyoming is the Reverend Caleb Nelson from Harvest Presbyterian Reformed Church. We're discussing big picture the ideas of morality, righteousness, and justice. We'll be back right after this.
If it's sports,
we've got it covered.
Now with Chris Brentall.
It's only 6:43, 43 past 6, 17, and then 7. I'm already getting the Hungry Blue Plate specials over at the Prime Rib Restaurant and Wine Cellar. Today is Hump Day, Wednesday, Land of the Campbells. Half a pizza and salad. Half a pizza, that's the... We got a pastor here, Caleb Nelson. That's the devil in you. The half a pizza and the angel is, I have a salad. It's like in the Southeast, you go to a family reunion, you slop on all the fatty foods, the barbecue, the baked beans, potato salad, coleslaw, apple pie. I'll have a Diet Coke to justify that. Our guest is the Reverend Caleb Nelson, pastor at Harvest Presbyterian Reformed Church here in Gillette. And we're talking big picture about what it means to be a moral person, what it means to be righteous, what it means to be just, not just as a person, but as a community, as a society. Going to go ahead and play again this little snippets of popular songs. And listen, obviously, not just to the tunes. They're very popular. The Eagles, Lynyrd Skynyrd, Rupert Holmes, Pina Colada song. But the lyrics and what they may or may not mean to you, to me, to Reverend Nelson, everybody, about morality and justice and big picture ideas.
The lure of eating money has got a bear's full appeal.
They're staring at dreams they call loneliness, but it's better than drinking alone.
It's good to be king and have your own way.
Every girl crazy about a goddamn man.
I was tired of my lady. We've been together too long.
Will she still love you?
I know just how to fake it, and I know just how to scheme.
My body out, what you gonna do with your life?
And I think if any of us are honest, our conscience routinely bothers us, Reverend Nelson, because all of us are filled with self-doubts, hatred of ourselves and others, pettiness, jealousy. Selfishness, I guess it's in the Christian construct, what you would call sin.
It is, yeah.
And in those tunes, we heard about loneliness, we heard about ego, we heard about money, we heard about sex, we heard about morality. And this is, I guess, the big human question is, we're here anywhere from a nanosecond to maybe 125 years. We live in specific times and places throughout history under different regimes and governments. We have different education levels, backgrounds, and intellects. But we're all human beings, and we all struggle with these things. Loneliness, sex, fame, ego, money, conscience. And how do we wrestle with these ideas and figure out why the heck we're here?
Well, there's two different ways to approach that. One is to start with what we don't know. And the other one is to start with what we know. And the ancients believed in starting with what you know. It was more in the modern world that the idea came of, well, let's start with what we don't know. Dumb idea.
Uh-huh.
Much better to think, well, what do I know? Well, you know, how do I know that it's wrong to steal? Well, let's say someone steals my wallet.
Right.
How do I feel about that? How do I know that it's wrong to dump my spouse? Well, let's say my spouse has an affair and hauls me into divorce court. How do I feel about that? And so on. We know the Apostle Paul, one of Jesus' chief lieutenants, chief buddies, wrote that we have the works of the law written on our hearts. And by that he means we all know in our heart, by our heart, by means of this faculty that God has implanted in us, what's right and wrong.
Morality, what is right and wrong, that's a quick summation of morality. Is it possible to have that without a higher power? Not even talking specifically Protestant, Presbyterian, even Christianity. You got Orthodoxy, Catholicism, and Protestantism, Judaism, Shintoism, Hinduism, Islam. Is it possible to believe in a moral system if you put human beings at the top? Does that add up logically?
I don't believe so. Everyone you talk to certainly will tell you there's no way to get from an is to an ought. Because the world is this way, therefore you ought to do X. Because it really, really hurts when your spouse has an affair, therefore you ought to never have an affair. Well, how can you get there? To have a morally binding thing means at some level that there's enforcement.
And I would think, too, if I believe that human beings are the top of the food chain, I'm a reasonably bright guy, I'm a reasonably educated guy, and certainly for most of human history, I'm a very wealthy guy living in modern America, but I don't believe there's anything higher power, anything after this life, then my motivation should be all about me. It should be about backstabbing, accumulating as much stuff as I can get, doing as much stuff just about me, and not about helping others or living by any moral code except what's best for AP Herald. I think that would be a logically consistent theme if those were my beliefs.
Well, that's certainly part of it, what's logically consistent with what you believe. But I read recently that in Boston, a very unchurched city, some huge percentage of people don't go to church, don't really have any religious commitments. But the majority of people there say they use common sense to figure out what's right and wrong. They would certainly say, well, we can know what's right and wrong. But to go from knowing it to doing it is two different things. You can't make the jump to doing it unless you really believe that there's an enforcement mechanism, that right means something beyond right now.
So do you think those people would, at some subconscious level, they do believe there's a higher authority telling them what's right or wrong, even if they don't want to admit it or can't admit it?
I believe so. Certainly the Apostle Paul said that they know the truth about God.
And I would say this, too, that let's say I'm one of those folks in Boston or here in Gillette or whatever. I'm 72 years old. I've got a terminal disease. I've probably got anywhere from 2 weeks to 2 months left. And if I really, truly believe that there's nothing else out there and I'm at the top of the food chain, I should go out and steal my neighbor's Mercedes. I should go out and poach an elk this hunting season because this is all I got. This is it. And it's about me. It's not about anything else.
Well, right. That thought process makes perfect sense.
But you rarely see that even among, say, an avowed atheist. And I guess your point would be that don't look at what somebody says, but look at their actions. That's going to be maybe more indicative of perhaps not a belief, but an understanding truth or an overall truth, archetypal truth about the universe.
Right. Yeah. If you ask someone any kind of moral question, say, were the Quakers wrong to go against the current of their society back in the 1700s and say, we believe that slavery is absolutely wrong 100% of the time? They were a tiny minority. And yet, can we look at them and say, oh, they were just dumb?
Very good point. Truth cannot simply be a majority vote, because truth should stand on its own, whether it's one person or even no people that are defending it. Truth is, it has its own merits.
That's exactly right. And truth remains true no matter what.
Our guest is the Reverend Caleb Nelson, pastor at Gillette's Harvest Presbyterian Reformed Church. This is Wake Up Wyoming. Wrapping things up in the 6 o'clock hour, our live in-studio guest, the Reverend Caleb Nelson, pastor at Harvest Reformed Presbyterian Church, or is it Harvest Presbyterian Reformed Church?
It's RP, Reformed Presbyterian.
Reformed Presbyterian
Reverse
Church.
Alphabetical order.
All right, there you go. It's like you're getting pulled over, and somebody suspects you've been drinking. Say the alphabet backwards. Give me a break. I'm from Georgia. I can't say the alphabet sober forwards. Caleb, if somebody out there is struggling with trying to figure out how they determine what is moral, what is right, what is just, where do you propose, suggest, ask them to start?
I would say pick up your phone and Google the Ten Commandments and just read those Ten Commandments and think about them. You'll find out that they're awfully hard to get around.
I can tell the difference in our ages, folks. He said pick up your phone and Google. I would have said go to your computer and Google, or maybe even go to the library. He's making me feel really, really old. Reverend Nelson, Caleb, if somebody wants to come listen to your sermons, participate, visit your church, how would they go about doing that? What is it? Where is it? When do you guys worship?
Again, Harvest Reformed Presbyterian, 2200 Greenway Drive. So if you're taking 1416 North up towards the airport, you come to the last stoplight in town, that's 4th Avenue. We are one block past that. You just take a left, and we're right off 1416.
Caleb Nelson, pastor of local church here in Gillette, Harvest Reformed Presbyterian Church. Thank you so much for stopping by. We wish you, and even more importantly, your wife, all the best as in the next couple of weeks, couple of kids coming in, fraternal twins, right?
That's right.
A boy and a girl.
That's right.
That's the way to do it. Caleb Nelson, thank you so much. And we'll leave you folks again with these entertaining but also thoughtful lyrics from some popular songs about ideas like morality, justice, and righteousness. This is on the final Wednesday, final hump day of March 2016, Wake Up, Wyoming.